Hey, everybody, what's going on? Welcome to Your Intention Matters, the podcast. My name is still Paul Madat. Thanks very much for joining me today. Psyched about this one. I have Margaret Weniger. She is Senior Director of Sales at a company called Mindbody. And Margaret, Hotlanta, that's what I call it up here in Toronto. Am I doing a disservice to Atlanta? Am I rubbing it the wrong way? Talk to me.
No, I call it Hotlanta too. I like to think that it's a great place to be. That's why we call it hot.
You know, the first time I went to Atlanta, I got out of the airport and it was like a punch in the face. It was like, I mean, Toronto can get some humid summers and I'm not really the big fan of humidity and mugginess and the clothes hanging off you and everything else. But man, oh man, Atlanta was like pow, right there, right out of, you know, Jackson Airport.
Yes, it's gross. August is pretty rough here, but I would say you can't beat spring and fall in Atlanta. I don't think there's anything more beautiful and the weather is perfect.
Yeah, it's a great town. Well, listen, thanks so much for being here. Say hi to everybody and provide a quick intro.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. So nice to meet you. I'm so excited. Like Paul said, I'm Senior Director of Sales at Mindbody. Fell backwards into software sales about 10 years ago and never got off that train. So I'm really excited to be here and to share my story.
I'm looking forward to it. As you know, the title of the podcast is called Your Intention Matters, and that's really built off my premise that nothing is really given to any of us. And most of us in the world of sales never thought we'd get into it, quite frankly, let alone sustain a career. And then most of us have meandering paths and big decisions to make. And everything starts with intention and mindset. So if you're ready to go, yeah. Let's get into your story.
Awesome.
Okay, here we go. We're going back in time, Margaret. That's what we do on this podcast here. We're going to take you back to 2007, Miami University, BA in Sports Studies. Yeah. Think back 13 years ago now. Do you recall what your vision was then? Did you have one? Did you have a thought around, well, this is what I'm going to do with the rest of my life based on my education now?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, no. I had no idea. You know, something that happened actually before 2007, my mother had been in software sales, worked for IBM. She'd worked for a company called Hyperion. And right before I went to college, she had a pretty bad experience. She was top performing manager, had been doing really great, and was let go. And it was very personal. Brilliant. And I watched that fallout happen. In my senior year, she was home for the first time in my life. She had always worked. She had always traveled for sales. So I went into college with this mindset of screw corporate America. I am not doing that. Right. I had this chip on my shoulder. And so I fumbled my way around college, landed on sports studies because I wanted to pick a degree where it didn't require a lot of math or science.
Okay.
So when I graduated, I was pretty lost. I was coming off of having, I was an athlete. So I was dealing with my identity changing for the first time. And so the only thing I thought was maybe I'll be a coach. I love swimming. I was really passionate about coaching. I'd always coached as a way to create revenue for myself in the summertime so that I could live off of in college. And so I thought maybe that's what I'll do. So that was about as far as I went, but I really had no idea when I graduated.
Well, like so many of us, you know, with you being an athlete, did you have any thoughts of the Olympics or profession as an athlete? Was there any thoughts of that at any time?
I wasn't good enough to go pro, but I definitely, when I graduated, it was the year before the Olympics. And so I had originally planned on taking a year and training just to go to trials. That was, you know, that was the plan. And ended up the plans that I had made and the place where I was going to train, it all fell through right at the last minute. I mean, we're talking like a month before I was supposed to move. And it just, maybe for better or for worse, but mentally, I just wasn't ready to try to find another solution. That was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. So that probably played into it as well, graduating, having a, you know, a plan to extend my athletic career one more year, but it fell through right before I was supposed to go.
Well, that must have been hard, especially so close to when it was supposed to happen.
Yeah, it was. It was a devastating blow. So I, you know, got to pack up and move back in with my parents.
Every person's dream, right?
Right.
All right. So once you came to accepting the reality and it is what it is. You've moved back home. You know, that's not the end goal, to stay home with mom and dad. And so you've got to get out there. So what was your first, you know, stab at your career? What did you end up doing? What was your first job, so to speak, after Miami University?
Yeah. So I took some odd jobs. So when I was living at home, I started coaching. I went back to the club team that I swam for in high school and was a part-time coach there. And again, I loved it. It was really fun. But what I started to realize was the quality of life for a swim coach is not great. And when I looked at people who were at the level that I would want to go to, you know, where I'd want to work with, you know, kind of elite level athletes, their quality of life wasn't great. Their health wasn't great. The swim season is grueling. You get about 5 weeks off between August and September for the entire year. Otherwise, you're training, you're competing, you're on deck and swimming. For anyone who doesn't know, you're usually doing doubles, which means you're at the pool at 5 a.m. and you're usually back again in the evening. So it's just, it wasn't a great lifestyle. So I started to learn that and realize that this is, as much as I love coaching, maybe that doesn't seem sustainable. The other job I picked up was, I loved clothes and I loved fashion. So I was like, maybe I'll dabble there and see if that's an opportunity. And I took a job at a store selling, it was a women's clothing store. They had the most beautiful things. And it was really selling to people that were my mom's age. Like, these were women that were probably 35 to 50. And it was so much fun because it basically was like shopping with my mom, and people felt like they were shopping with their daughter. So I loved it. Super fun. But again, started to realize, like, this isn't necessarily, like, this is a little...
It's not a career.
It wasn't a career. It was really fun, though.
Okay. All right. So where did you end up going after that attempt?
Yeah. So love took me to Auburn, Alabama. I had trained with the Auburn team the summer before my senior year of college and met a guy and fell in love. And so I decided, you know what? Nothing's tying me to Atlanta. Let's see if this relationship has legs. So I continue my pursuit of odd jobs and move to Auburn, Alabama, where I proceeded to work at a restaurant that was just opening and convinced them to let me do their marketing. So I was running like a shift lead on, you know, in the actual restaurant. And then I was doing kind of grassroots marketing for them to try to get the word out about this restaurant. It was new to the area, and get people to come and check it out. It was called Shakey's. It was like a arcade / pizza joint.
And how'd it go?
You know, again, really interesting. It was the food industry. I had a knack for finding just brutal industries, right? Retail, coaching, food. It was good. It was really fun. What started to happen was, that's, I think, where the seeds of sales got planted, because I would go to networking events in the area. I would, you know, go to different chamber of commerce events to meet people. And as I would be talking to them, I probably had 3 or 4 people say, you should think about sales. Have you considered doing sales? That seems like something you might be really good at, right? And so the seeds started to get planted there. But the owner of the restaurant, you know, he was this guy that was maybe 50 years old, but he looked 75.
Oh,
you know, he worked probably 60 to 70 hours minimum a week. And he kind of thought that was normal and wanted that. And I didn't. It was like, I'm not really looking to give my life away to a restaurant and sacrifice everything else. I want a family. I want a little more balance than that. I want to be healthy. So again, looking at kind of what I was aspiring to, realizing that was not long-term, but some good came out of it, because I started to be more open to considering sales as a career.
So prior to people putting it in your ear, had you ever thought of sales or you as a sales professional?
No way. Again, I think after watching what happened to my mom, it really put a bad taste in my mouth. And so I kind of associated that negative experience specifically with sales.
It's so funny that you say that, because before I ever joined Xerox, I was on the finance side. I have a background in numbers, economics, and I was in credit and collections for a long time. And I'd never thought of sales ever in terms for me. And then I got fired And all of a sudden I'm out of work. And a buddy of mine came to me and said, hey, why don't you think about sales? There was an opening at Xerox. I go, sales? What are you talking about? I said, I'm trying to get back into credit. Like, he says, well, what have you got to lose? He says, you're out of work. Why not go? And I said, yeah, why not go? So I went, interviewed, ended up being almost 10 years.
Right. There you go. Right? It's funny how that seems to be so often the story. And whenever we bring on new sales reps and I ask them why sales, I get to do a lot of interviews. Yeah. Inevitably, it's usually one of two things. Either a parent was in sales and they are, you know, they saw that and followed in their footsteps, or somebody told them they'd be good at it.
Okay.
You know, it usually falls into one, like, it's not something that most people, we're seeing more of it, but most people don't go to school for,
right,
for sales.
Right. So where'd you go? Where'd you land?
Yeah. Oh, my odd jobs still continued. I ended
First of all, actually, before I ask you, the guy you followed, still in your life?
Yes, we got married.
Oh, you got married. Look at that, Auburn.
Worth it, yes. It was love at first speedo, I like to tell people.
I love it. Well, good.
Yeah, so it was worth the year stint in Auburn. But one thing that happened at Auburn was people could not figure out why I was there. I didn't go to school there and I wasn't from Auburn. So people could not for the life of them figure out what I was doing there.
Is she lost? Yeah.
Right. So I ended up moving back to Atlanta. And about that time, my now husband, his sister was working for a company out in San Diego called Active. And she, you know, I said, maybe sales, like that seems like it. And believe it or not, this company was trying to hire somebody to sell swim software. And so she said, hey, would you be interested? So I ended up applying and went through the full interview process. And this is like 2008, 2009 timeframe. So I think we all remember how great the economy was then. And went through the interview process. It all was going really great. I was getting really excited. And then I got a call. I remember it was Valentine's Day. And the recruiter just said, we love you. We wish we could make an offer, but we are on full lockdown. We're in a hiring freeze. And please stay in touch, but we'll be in touch if something changes.
How many people right now can appreciate that because of what's going on right now? So how did you manage that mentally?
Yeah, I mean, it was a bummer, but I moved back home with my parents. I stayed in touch with the hiring manager. So I just set a reminder once a month, I would drop her a note to just stay front of mind for her so that, you know, if something came back up, like I'd kind of fallen in love with this company and the job seemed like it was made for me. And so then San Diego, hello, like who wouldn't want to live in San Diego?
Beautiful
so it
part
all
of the
felt
world.
Perfect. So I was determined to get it. It was just a matter of like, I had the luxury, I could be patient. So I emailed her, you know, once a month. I took a job working, staffing lifeguards for the summer in Atlanta, which, you know, we staffed over 500 lifeguards. Gotta be the most stressful job I've ever had in my life.
I bet.
15-year-old kids doing their first job don't realize that your shift means you're required to show up.
Right. And you're responsible for people's lives.
Right. And you're responsible for people's lives. So that made me appreciate not being stressed out all the time. But stayed in touch with her. And then I remember Labor Day that year. I remember sending an email just to wish her happy Labor Day. And that was in my mind. I was like, it's time to move on. It's been 7 months. Like, just let it go. It's time to, you've got to figure out another path. Crazy enough. So I send her the email. She writes back, glad you stayed in touch. We're going to be lifting the freeze at the beginning of the year. I'll be in touch beginning of January, but so happy you stayed connected. So, right. Just that little nugget of hope.
Just enough, right? A little crack.
So, and sure enough, she reached out first week of January. We picked back up the interviews. And then I ended up moving out March and starting at Active Network.
You went to San Diego.
I took one car with probably three suitcases with all my possessions, and I moved out across the country to San Diego.
Did you move out solo, or did your boyfriend at the time, or was he your husband yet, or did he come with you?
No, he was. He stayed. He was in. Panama City Beach, Florida, working for the Navy as a civilian.
Oh man. So you're not only already apart where you were in Atlanta to Florida, at least the same time zone. Yeah. And I don't know how far it is to drive, but I mean, it's maybe manageable.
It's doable. Yeah.
Doable. But now you're in San Diego, three time zones across the country,
yep.
New job, new city. Mm-hmm. Pretty psyched, it sounds like, about this new opportunity, but a lot of unknowns here.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely, thankfully, I'm very fortunate that Luke is the kind of person that he is, very encouraging and has always been very supportive of me chasing down my career dreams and has never stood in the way of that. And he eventually found his way out to San Diego. But yeah, that year was tough. It was a very challenging year to be that far apart.
Did you enjoy Southern California? Did you enjoy active? Was sales for you right away? Was it hard? What was that transition like once you made the move?
It was, it's so funny because I think you just don't know what you don't know. So most of my, it's so funny because when sales development reps didn't exist, right? Like, so I was what was considered a full cycle account executive where I hunted for my own opportunities, which I didn't mind because of my swimming background, I was pretty much one step removed from most coaches. Like I could usually leverage my network to help me get in, or I could reference somebody. And part of the reason they wanted to hire a swimmer is because swimming has its own language, I didn't have to learn the language. I knew how to talk to coaches. I knew what they cared about. And I loved the technology, and I totally got how it helped. So it really helped that I had that. So it felt really easy because I felt like I was talking to my people. It was a world I knew and loved. And then being an athlete, I think I naturally gravitated towards having numbers that I was shooting for. So it felt very natural. Like I really enjoyed it. And I loved the company in San Diego. It was such an incredible experience. It was an amazing company, had a great culture. The people that worked there were still to this day, some of my dear friends and, favorite people in the world came from that company.
How long were you there for?
We were out there for 5 years.
5 years. That's a pretty long stretch.
Yeah, I think we would have stayed, but sometimes life has a way of telling you, like, you're not meant to be here anymore. So active, funny enough, got acquired by Vista Equity, which is the same company that has acquired Mindbody. So we, went on the journey of being private, we went public, and then we were acquired by Vista, and they ended up moving headquarters to Dallas. And, the idea of going from San Diego to Dallas didn't really hold a lot of appeal.
Right. So if I'm hearing you correctly, if I'm going to go back east, I might as well go back to Atlanta.
Funny enough, I really didn't like Atlanta. After high school, I actually thought I would never come back, and especially after college, living at home with my parents, I was like, there's gotta be, right. I thought I would never leave San Diego. And when we started sitting down and looking at, okay, where, weather wise, the type of activities we like to do, the type of home we want to have, and then for me, it was, where is there software? Where is there a hub? Atlanta was booming.
Yeah.
The Atlanta Tech Village was this like big sexy thing. Like there were incubators. It had really transformed. And so all of a sudden Atlanta became the city that checked all the boxes, but it was actually something that we never would have considered years before.
Margaret, at the time, were you out of work or were you able to transition into a move to a company, or did you have to fly back to Atlanta, drive back to Atlanta, jobless?
I was very fortunate. When the transition happened at Active, I shifted into a sales training role, which was really fun because I got to test that out as a career path because it was something I was considering of, do I want to do sales training? Do I want to do enablement? Is that something I'm interested in because of my coaching side?
How much best I job love in it. The world.
Right. Yeah. Right. turns out it wasn't for me.
Okay.
But it was really fun because, I got to meet a lot of, I've learned in my career, I love getting to work with people who are just starting their sales careers. There's something really energizing about being around them and kind of watching them have these aha moments. So that was really fun because we helped onboard about 100 account executives in Dallas. So I kind of used that as like a bridge for about 9 months from my sales management role to doing that. And then I had been reaching out, knowing we were going back to Atlanta, I had been reaching out to my network to just say, do you know anyone? And got connected to Kyle Porter at SalesLoft. And they were just happened to be looking for somebody to run their sales development team. And so ended up getting an official offer there. So relocated back to Atlanta, with a job to run a sales development team when I had never run sales development before. So that was, you know, that was another new adventure.
Okay. And so what was your tenure like at SalesLoft?
So it was really fun. When I started at SalesLoft, for anybody that knows like original SalesLoft, we were just getting to the point where we were launching Cadence, which is now just their sales engagement platform. And LinkedIn was pretty much saying, we're going to shut you off for Prospector, which people loved Prospector, but it wasn't a sustainable revenue stream. So it was right when the business was really having to make some pretty major product pivots. So that was super fun. I got to be there. I came in, I was employee number 49, and then went through some pretty aggressive growth over the next year and a half and scaled up our sales development team from 8 to 24, you know, promoted in managers. And again, I think when I look at that sales development team, the sales talent that came out of that group in the time that I was there is astounding. You know, I think something that Kyle and Rob do so great at SalesLoft is they had built such a strong culture, and they were really, they made my job as a hiring manager very easy because people were coming left and right to try to get jobs. And I was getting some really, really high end talent that wanted to be sales development reps. You know, some of these were, you know, pretty accomplished individuals. So
yeah,
it was,
I know SalesLoft to be a tier one company. I don't know him very well, but I had Jeremy Donovan on the podcast a while back, and the guy's such a class act and cares about people. And he's so vested in what he does as being trying to be helpful.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was really interesting because, you know, at Active, you know, we were a big company. I think we were around 2,500 to 3,000 employees. And then now I go to it was my first dabble in startup. You know, but I loved it because one of the things that I struggled with at Active was I wanted to run. I wanted to make changes, and I've always loved change and evolution. And so that was one of my favorite aspects, was the level of influence and impact you can have at a business like that is significant.
Did you take to Atlanta the second time around? Once you moved back, was it easier than you thought? And
yeah, it was, you know, it's interesting because I think hindsight, it was really it's still, you know, challenging to make friends when you're at this stage of life. So I think that's probably been the only thing where, you know, we had a really great community in San Diego, and we kind of gave that up when we moved to Atlanta. But overall, it's been great. Like we've loved being back here. And I think for me, I just love what a melting pot it's become. Mm. You know, I think part of what I didn't love about Atlanta is I was actually born in Indiana, and we moved to Atlanta when I was a year and a half old. So I thought of myself as from Atlanta, but people who were natives were like, no, you're not. So I always felt like an outsider in my, right, what I consider to be my own city. And so I think one of the things that I loved about how Atlanta's transformed is that there's so many people from all over that you get to meet now, and that it's actually much more common to meet somebody that's not from Atlanta than it is to meet somebody who's lived here their whole life. And I've loved that.
The decision to move on from SalesLoft, was it yours or was it theirs?
It was theirs.
It was theirs.
Yeah.
Well, how was that for you at the time?
You know, it's so interesting because it hurts. It was the first time I've been fired. And I'd never been fired from anything, ever. I mean, like it's kind of like, it felt like a massive failure. And I was hurt by it, you know. But I think when I took a step back and started to reflect on it, like, it was good. You know, I think so often in life, what I found is that when you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, and I love it, my boss, Aaron Stead, he says, like, when it's not working for the company, it's usually not working for the person either. And I think that holds such truth, where I loved my team. I loved the company and what we stood for. You know, I think we were starting to fork in the road as far as me as a person, where I was going and where the leadership team wanted to go. And so when I got over kind of, I think the ego bruise, right? Yeah. Then I could really see, like, this is good. Like, I don't think I was truly that happy at the end. And I was I don't know if I would have made the hard decision myself.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. April 10th, 2001, the best day of my career because it was the day I was fired.
Right.
Now, at the time, I remember that day, like walking back to my car. I was in a stupor. I had this envelope I hadn't even looked at. I was told, don't come to work tomorrow. Here's some money. Go away. And I wasn't expecting it at all. Mm-hmm. I remember walking back to the car. Now, what do I do? How much money do I have? Which really wasn't a lot. And so thinking, now where am I going to go? And and of course, the ego part of it was, how do I explain that I was just canned? Even though they said, you know, you were laid off. No. It was performance based. I was gone. And they gave me a check to go away for a little bit. And it took me a while. But, you know, in the end, you know, almost 20 years now, it was the best thing to ever happen to me because it catapulted me into my next thing, which had I not been fired from that security company in Toronto, I probably would have never found Xerox. I would have never found sales, would have never found sales training. And as a result, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. I'd probably be stuck behind a desk punching numbers and looking at credit reports and just, you know, killing myself because I didn't want to do that. So, right. But it was a gut punch for sure when that happened to me. How old were you?
Yeah. I was, 31? And I had just had my first kid. So I was like 6 months, like I had a 6 month old.
Oh my God. That had a whole other level to it.
Yeah. So I think part of it too was like my life as a person had completely changed earlier that year. And so it, you know, I think you, again, right? Like having a family has been one of the greatest challenges, but also one of the greatest gifts to me. Like I've transformed in so many ways as a person, and I think become a better, more compassionate person having kids. But it definitely impacted my priorities, and you know, all of a sudden, things that never mattered to me before had become important. And trying to maintain or go back to what was normal for me before having a kid just that didn't make sense anymore. And so I think that also played into, you know, I think why things just weren't necessarily going as great, right? Mm. It's like, it wasn't aligning as well with what had shifted in my personal priorities.
Were you out of work for a while?
I started, no, which probably wasn't necessarily a good thing. So almost immediately afterwards, I had been approached by a company to just help do some consulting with them. They were looking to build out, they wanted to start scaling. They were, you know, they've been kind of a steady flat growth company for the last 5 years, and they were trying to now accelerate their growth, and they were looking for a sales leader to help them build an SDR team and, you know, expand their account executive team. So I started just doing an outbound playbook for them and helping get some of the basics in place and, you know, a hiring profile and help them get a couple of their first candidates. And you know, I did that for about 3 months was the consulting time frame. And then, you know, at the end of it, they said, would you come on full time? And, you know, when I left sales off, one of the things that I really missed while I was there was getting to work with the closers. Mm. And I missed, you know, sales development is great, but there's like three levers. Like there's not a whole lot of knobs to turn. And so I'm one of those people, like I love to be challenged and so I was missing, you know, some of the complexity that comes with the sales cycle. And so it was extremely tempting and attractive to get to now build out my own team. I was going to get to do sales development and sales. Like this was what I wanted.
Nice.
But what I failed to realize is, you know, this was an even smaller company than SalesLoft. You know, they were just around 5 million in revenue. And, you know, again, like that, I learned there that I am not a startup person anymore. That is not my cup of tea. And as a sales leader, that is not where I'm driven. I'm not the startup leader that loves to be kind of in the trenches. I much more enjoy creating vision, setting strategy, working cross-functionally with other teams and with experts than I am with like the grind. Mm-hmm. Startup. But I didn't know that until I got into it and kind of was figuring that out as we were very under-resourced. We, you know, definitely had not fully proven out the market, and being somewhat of a naive sales leader, didn't quite know where to call out maybe some of the gaps in the strategy.
How long was it, do you recall, from when you first started thinking about this isn't for me, short-term, long-term, to when you actually made the decision to move on?
Yeah, you know, so it's interesting. It probably started to happen, what was that, 2018? It was the beginning of 2018. And I was pregnant again. For all the ladies listening, like, if you ever want to know how to build a maternity policy at a company, I, you know, managed to have both of my kids at two different startups, and I was the first pregnant woman at both, which hindsight 2020, it's like, good Lord, what was I thinking? But I think again, like, that was a bit of a fight. And what I started to realize is just culturally, I had some concerns as a female, just with how things were going, and that I was, you know, having that it was this big of a dialogue, and that maybe a company this size wasn't necessarily either able to provide the resources or didn't see the value in providing the resources for somebody that was a parent, especially a female. So that kind of started in January, and then right before I went on maternity leave, like, things had definitely, it was kind of like, okay, like, there's nothing I can do.
Right.
I will, you know, go, I will be gone. I foolishly only took 8 weeks, before I came back to work. I came back to work, and a week later was fired again. So I've been fired twice.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Did the second time around, did you take it better this time because you had the previous experience, or was it just as gut-wrenching as it was the first time?
This one was different. I knew it was not a great situation. So I think I took it better in that regard of, like, I knew it wasn't me. But I think the timing of it, there was definitely some anger there, because it was, I had come back early from maternity leave because I felt guilty for being gone, which I shouldn't have in 8 weeks. Are you kidding me? That is, I mean, I cried the day I came back to work. I was so sad. It just felt like I hadn't been home long enough. And so I think that had more to do with, like, there was anger there, because for the first time in my career, like, I really felt kind of like I was, there was a different standard. And so it was good. I was glad. Like, I knew I was getting out of what would have been a bad situation long-term, just again, because of what my priorities were, what stage of life I was at, what mattered to me. And this belief that, like, I can do both, you know, like, I'm smart enough. I'm strong enough. I'm capable of finding a way to deliver the results at work and also having, you know, having boundaries so that I can be with my family too.
Yeah. That's a tough thing. I mean, you know, up here in Canada, the maternity leave for the first year is 12 months. It's actually been bumped up to 18 months now. And so anybody listening in Canada would say, oh my God, 8 weeks is, that's incredible. I mean, the baby is so small, but you're not alone to have that mindset of feeling guilt of, I'm an employee. I have to go back to work. I'm physically able to do it. And trying to have that balance. And so that's a tough spot for you and for hundreds of thousands of other women out there in Canada as well. Even after the year, there's even that guilt of the baby's still only 12 months, barely walking, right? How do I leave this little human that's totally dependent upon, you know, me for support. So, Margaret, I want to talk to you about 2020. I know that you've been at Mindbody now for just over a year.
Yeah.
And 2020, just what a year, right? And some companies are doing really great. Some people are doing really great during this year, but most people, I would say in the moment, would say 2020 has been a challenge on a number of different levels. Mm-hmm. And so how have you managed the last 6-7 months, both personally and professionally? Talk to me about 2020.
Yeah, gosh, it has been, felt like 10 years. I think every week felt like a month, every month felt like a quarter, every quarter felt like a year. And you know, for us, it's really interesting because when I started at Mindbody in August of 2019 and, had a big turnaround on my hands. And I love that. I thrive on that as a leader. But, you know, I spent the first 6 months of my job kind of getting the team into a good place, right? And so February of 2020, we were really excited. We were, doing really great. The team was starting to accelerate. We were finally starting to reap the rewards of all of this really kind of painful change and turnover and transition that we had just gone through. So that was like, it was like we were just launching and then COVID hit.
Yeah.
And our customers are some of the most impacted with serving, you know, the salon and spa business owners and fitness and wellness studio. So that was, you know, I think that was kind of very quickly middle of March to the first week of April. Those 3 weeks are some of the most intensive weeks. And I have such, again, admiration for my boss because, you know, I think in light of how rapidly things were changing and how significantly our industry was impacted and having to make very difficult decisions, you know, I really admire the decisions that were made, the level of communication, and then just, you know, I think this sense of like acknowledging kind of the storm that we were all in, right? Yeah. I think there was this constant acknowledgement of like, this is hard, this is scary, this is unknown, and this isn't going to be easy, and it's different. And I think that was really, I really admired that. And so, you know, we had to go through a pretty major riff and furloughs at the beginning of April. And that was tough. We had to cut deeper than I wanted. But, you know, it's, I think, you know, you talk about intention and mindset, you know, this is where you could either fight it or just lean into the fact, you know, embrace the suck, if you will, and say like, all right, this is the reality. So how do we make the most of it? And so quickly figuring out how do we best support our customers? How do we best support our sales team that's still having to have these frontline conversations? And so, you know, we, for probably most of Q2, we had daily manager syncs so I could make sure that they were up to speed on everything that was going on. We
did,
you know, weekly stand-ups with the whole sales team just to bring them together and share a highlight. So it's been a big adjustment, you know, just scale of company, size of company, changing our sales motion and trying to figure out how do we support our customers? How can we adjust our technology so that it supports them in this, you know, kind of reopening phase of COVID. And it's been incredibly inspiring to get to lock arms with, you know, with my team, with my leaders, with the leaders for our product and marketing. And it's been really incredible to see everyone kind of coming together and aligning, you know, at a time when we really could have been divided.
Yeah. You know, and I was going to say congratulations on creating that, because you're right. It could have gone the other way and it could have gone the other way pretty quickly, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Very easily as well.
Yeah.
Margaret, it's been great speaking with you. Last question I have for you here. Yeah. I always like to ask anybody who's a guest, if you had one piece of, whether it be advice or feedback or something that has maybe served you well in your life, for anybody listening, anything that you might want to say, this is my foundation. This is what works for me.
Yeah. Okay. Ooh, it's so hard, but the thing that's really hit me in the last couple of years has been this idea of, you know, knowing who you are, taking time to understand that. And this applies, I think, in your career, whether you're in sales or not, but in sales, it's understanding your unique talents, strengths, and voice, and taking the methodology and blending those. So you know what you're doing and why you're doing it, but how does it come out for you authentically? How do you leverage what you do best to execute that methodology, right? So I think from a sales perspective, it's make sure to take the time to do that. Don't try to be somebody else just because they're the top performer. Figure out why they're the top performer, but then make it yours, right? And and then I think it's just as a person and professional, you know, it's evaluating, like, why does this, you know, if something feels off, why does it feel off? And I think I spent a lot of time thinking there was something wrong with me. You know, I was in environments and I kind of allowed people to have that power. And instead it's, I think, really embracing, again, who you are, bring the best version of yourself, and how can you take the things that you do really well and focus those on the tasks or the projects or the initiatives that you're executing on. But don't try to fit into somebody else's mold.
Yeah, I love it. Margaret, it has been so great speaking to you. I'm glad we were able to finally get this on the books. It took a while here, but intention, we created it.
Yes.
And it was certainly well worth the wait. And thanks so much for freeing up the time. Wife, mother, senior director of sales, coach, swimming. My goodness, how'd you find the hour for me? Thank you.
You bet. Thank you so much. This has been such a treat.
All right, everybody, let's wrap this one up right now. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We'll do it again next week. Be safe, everybody. We'll be right back.